If you wanted to buy a Sam Cooke Abbey, where would you go?
All right. You're listening to the Record Store Podcast. Well, today you're watching the Record Store Podcast, and I'm with the incredible Greg Hoy. How you doing, Greg?
I'm with the incredible John Champion. How are you, sir?
Man, I am fine as frog's hair. I tell you what, buddy. Greg is an amazing musician, long-respected veteran musician. Right now, he's out of East Bay, California, but he's an East Coast guy. East Coast guy at heart, right?
East Coast guy always. I still wear all black, even though I'm in California. When I first moved out here, people used to call me Johnny Cash, and at first I was like, that's nice, but I'm like, I don't think you know what you're saying when you say that.
Now, for those of you that don't know about Greg, his songs have been heard on networks such as the CW, HBO, MTV. He's had music in commercials on Pinterest, Adobe, mm-hmm. American Express, mm-hmm. Red Red Wine on a Sunday music podcast says Greg's records are deep and they're like peeling layers off an onion. I absolutely love that.
And I love that one too. So visual.
I agree. Each song is a revelation. I go along with that. And I agree, man. I mean, I love the lyrics. I love your musicality. The melodies and the harmonies. I'm loving this new album that you sent a brother. Oh,
yeah.
Look, this is awesome. I love just being able to open up and read the right. Like the old days, baby. That's what I'm talking about.
I love that the tactileness of a gatefold sleeve on vinyl.
Man, nothing beats it. Nothing beats it.
They did a nice job with the matte finish, I thought.
Oh man, it looks so good, man. Yeah. So tell me about Yay for Effort. When was it done? What things in your life inspired the album? And you can take your time, man.
Yeah, no, I always appreciate talking to you. So thanks for having me. It was one of those things where I probably started it sometime mid pandemic. My wife and I had a house, we no longer do, up in the mountains in Northern California. And when we got the house, I got a 1923 Steinway piano.
Oh, man.
So the Steinway, there was a guy just selling one pretty inexpensively nearby. And there's a particular room in that house that faces a mountain. It's beautiful and it's wooden, like a nice mid-century wooden walls, all glass. And I told her at the time, I need to record in this room, like at some point. And when the pandemic started and things started, you know, evolving for all of us to stay indoors, I started sort of writing piano songs, which I've done over in the past. Like I've sat down and said, I'm going to write a piano song. But in this case, it was sort of just, you know, to keep my sanity like everybody else. It was just one of the things I was doing. And the room just sounded great. And slowly over 3 years, this record kind of happened because the songs aren't the kind of songs I normally write for the rock and roll band. Uh-huh. I had my father passed away. I had a really close friend that died a few weeks before him. And another friend that had passed away during pandemic. And what I found was I was kind of writing a lot of cathartic songs, which didn't fit anywhere. And I would just start saving them on a folder. And it was called Sad Piano Songs.
Oh, gotcha. What else to call them?
As you do. And I found the picture that's on the cover back in January. A friend of mine had taken that picture 10 years ago in New York City. We were just staying in a loft apartment down in Chinatown. And I posed, you know, I just kind of did this goofy, like Elton John kind of pose. And when I found that picture, John, that's when I realized I should make a record with that picture as the guidepost.
Right.
And I culled, there were like 20 some songs. I culled them down to the 10 that are on the record. I polished them, played every instrument myself, man. Much like you and I's mutual friend, Prince.
You got it. Love that guy. I tell you.
Love him and listen to a lot of, like, I was listening to the first three Prince records a lot, even though I don't think there's a lot of funk on this record. It still was very inspiring to, like, feel like, you know, here's one person that's just doing everything.
Man.
And that's how it all came together. And then I had to think about, you know, how am I going to play these songs live, which is sort of where I'm at now.
I bet he had the same problem. There he is.
Very much so. And you know, he probably, if, you know, we think about, I wonder how many people he went through before he found the core revolution. I don't know much about previous to, you know, Purple Rain, Prince, or 1999 Prince, live.
Yeah.
But I'm going to bet he went through a lot of people.
Man, well, you know, he had Dr. Fink for a long time.
That's right.
Bobby Z, he had those guys. He had that keyboard and he had that right drummer.
Yep.
You know, definitely, man. Now, you were talking about no funk. There's something funky about that first track that first track on the album.
Yep.
You go, oh, man, that's Emotional Rescue.
You got it. You nailed it. Oh, you nailed it.
I love that.
First person that's figured out where I stole that loop from.
Man, that's beautiful. Beautiful. Thanks. And speaking of loops now, you made a hell of a big purchase here recently. Tell us all about this Eventide Harmony.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So when I got to California, there was, it's no longer, a place called Tiny Telephone. And it was a big 90s, 2000s, 2-inch tape analog studio run by a guy named John Vanderslice, very well-respected indie rock musician. Mm-hmm. And I had moved to San Francisco not knowing anyone. So I did the sensible thing. I booked time at the studio to meet some people. And actually, ironically, now that I think about it, that was 2011. I played all the instruments on that record too, and it was also a sad record. So maybe there was some. But anyway, the studio, you know, due to rent and pandemic, the studio could no longer sustain, and John sold all the gear. Yeah. And the piece I ended up with is called an Eventide Harmonizer, and I'm sure most people that may be listening to this don't know what that is, but it was an early '70s digital manipulator. Mm-hmm. That folks like Chic and David Bowie and Peter Gabriel, they would use it like the Power Station. Do you remember the Power Station record?
Oh yeah, Some Like It Hot. Those Duran Duran guys.
I still well, it was Bernard Edwards from Chic, and
yeah,
and that drum sound is all Eventide. That's all what they did was they ran the my understanding is they ran the room mics on the drums through this device, uh-huh, which basically took the sound and dropped it an octave.
Wow.
And that's why you have that big, thick drum sound. The other things this device does, it's a weird delay, but uh-huh, if you like mess with it while you're singing through it or playing something through it, it kind of has a mind of its own. So anyway, you've heard it all over stuff, and it became sort of a vital part of making this record.
Oh man, that is awesome. Now, we were talking earlier about what you've been through, mm-hmm, some people surviving a pandemic, wildfires, yeah, floods, and best of all, becoming a dad.
Yeah.
So these songs that you've put together, they've been spread out for a while. That's not like you just, yeah, sat down during all this going on at one time. You've been able to just pull back pieces from your life, from yeah, your experiences, and say, hey, I gotta put this out.
Yeah, you know, I think about, like, I like to cook. I like to walk into a kitchen and like pick stuff. You know, I'm not a big recipe guy. And I think this record is like that. It's like it sort of evolved out of, like I said, that picture sort of like gave me a way to look at how a 10-song album could be. And once that happened, and that happened really late. It happened, like, you know, I would say 7 of those songs were pretty much done before that happened. And I don't know, you know, I don't know. I think we all went through a lot during pandemic, and everyone has their, you know, their thoughts and their journey. And you know, I sometimes jokingly and not jokingly say live, I say, hey, we're all COVID survivors, you know, and I'm not just talking about the disease. I'm talking about the philosophical, the psychological, all the stuff we went through for those few years.
Definitely.
And just to your question or your point, like, becoming a dad was weird during that.
But I know. I see your Facebook. I see your Instagram. Man, you look so happy. So.
Oh man, yeah. I mean, best thing that ever happened to me. Who knew? I mean, I've heard it from other people.
I love it. I love it. Now you're hitting the road soon, yep, and coming back to the East Coast.
Yes.
You've already had a little dabble. Are you excited?
Very excited. I think that my favorite people to play with are still East Coasters. They just, the musical language there is different than out here. And I never like quite feel, I always feel like a fish out of water when I perform on the West Coast.
Right.
And you know, anytime we play East Coast, and I think that's probably why I gravitate to doing those tours, I connect more with the band, I connect more with the audience, I connect more with the other bands. You know, there's a different feeling about, you know, a 10 o'clock rock and roll show. you know, especially as I get older.
Oh yeah.
I'm like, can we make it an 8 o'clock rock and roll?
I want to take a nap. Exactly.
It's funny. My booker, I told my booker to like ask every venue, like if they're willing to start shows earlier. And they're still sort of stuck. They're stuck in these, like, I mean, I think most venues are now moving to 9 o'clock, which is better than the 10 o'clock first band start.
Yeah, so. Definitely. Because I still love to go out. I still love listening to live music, but it's tough, you know, with, you know, and a lot of places aren't staying open until 2 a.m. anymore. And
I think it's better. I think it's better if you still have like a solid head and you just are digesting your dinner to see some music. You know?
I love it. Now, would you mind if we go track by track and you tell me a little bit about each song, something special, like about
only for you, only for you, John.
Oh man. Oh no. I'm loving that song. And like we said, it's got that Stones vibe at the beginning. Yep. Man, where were you when you were putting that one together?
So my friend that passed away, he and I had a hip hop band in college. Okay. So, you know, I would, and during pandemic with all that time that we had, whatever, I set up my turntables and I got this cool mixer from the 80s that had a giant button on it. So you could sample 12 seconds. Ooh. So you'd play a record and you could just hit the button. It's a Gemini, like they're hard to find. I've bought a few now because they keep dying on me. Mm-hmm. And then you hit the button again. So it's really imperfect. So I just started, you know, I'd hear a good loop. I'd start doing that, I'd start saving. So I had a folder full of loops. That particular song, I've always loved that intro to Emotional Rescue.
Oh, definitely.
But I had to slow it way down so I didn't get in trouble.
right.
And also I think it helped it was a 45. So it's very, like the first few people I gave my record to kind of give me feedback, a few of them were like, hey, there's a lot of noise on that first song. So then I'm like, yeah, that's.
Put the needle on the record. I love it.
And so the song started that way because I was working on tracks with my friend who passed away and we were going to try to do another record together. So then it sort of shifted into a song about him and my dad. And the drums, I was really going for that, like, late 70s Peter Gabriel, Phil Collins, like big drum sound on the part where I play and that's where the Eventide harmonizer came into play because I was running the drums through it and it was able to kind of get that, you know, that big, like, in the air tonight room sound, like where it's just sucking the air out of the room and it's just all drum.
I love it.
And that's how that song kind of developed and no bass line.
Oh man, it is
another homage to Prince. I didn't put a bass line on it.
It's so funky to me. I love it. I could listen to that one over and over. And the title track,
you like it.
Yay for Effort. Mm-hmm. What's up with that? Talk to me about Yay for Effort.
Yeah, that. So, you know, after I decided to make a record of all these songs, that phrase had been running through my head a lot about pandemic. Like, because it felt like everyone in a position of leadership were trying. But they weren't really succeeding in my point of view. It felt like everything was like mixed messages. No one was taking the ball. No one was like, here, I got this. And I just kept saying that in my head, like, well, yay for effort. We tried, you know, and that effort, that phrase kind of just stuck with me as this, like, almost like maybe it's people of a certain age, you know, like a Gen X, like, you know, we're all good. We're pretty good at giving up, but trying. like, I'll try, but I'm okay.
Right.
You know, I'm okay letting it go.
I dig
it. And I started sort of, you know, the whole A for effort thing when I was growing up, like that was like a phrase when you're in school, like there's something sort of, it just stuck with me. So once that became the album title, I had to write a title track. And I'd always wanted to write a song that started with just a bass line.
Right. Man, it's a beauty to hear, man. I'm going to put all these links and comments and stuff, you know, on the podcast site so people can check it out and definitely.
Yeah, and I the other thing I'll say about that song is I think it's the first time I tried to do the like Bono kind of screams at the end, you know, like that shit he did in the 90s, like Act Tongue Baby Time. That was intentional.
I love it. Love it. Now let's see. Next up is Listen Up.
Yeah. That was also like came out of the piano, just the straight up piano, like, you know, sitting down with a cup of coffee, those chords kind of come to you,
man.
And that song is just completely about climate and, you know, why we weren't paying attention. And the phrase "listen up" was kind of like you know, I think, did you see the movie Don't Look Up?
Yeah, I did. I love that movie.
This was like, for me, it was a song version of that movie. Like, everything's being told to us if we pay attention, and no one seems to be paying attention.
I dig it.
So that was where that one came from.
I hear you, man. Today is not the day to die. Track 4.
Okay, that one is super. There's two things that came out of that. So this is gonna sound morbid, but it's kind of funny. My father, the last thing he said was, "Today is the day to die." That was his last like full sentence. And I had a boss when I worked at the Village Voice in New York many years ago, who would run around, and when there was a big problem, he would say, "This is not the hill to die on." And somewhere between like my dad's passing and saying that phrase and like still being optimistic that that's not going to be today with that phrase, that sort of led to this like jazzy little number.
I love it. It's got a great sound.
Before you know it, I thought of you when I was making that song, John.
Really?
You know why? Yeah, because I at some point when the guitars come in, I'm like, you know, I remember John Champion said he heard a little Steely Dan in my music.
And I love the Dan.
I was like, yeah, I remember we talked years ago. And then I was like, I'm gonna try to do a. And so I called the guitar parts on the multi-tracks Steely Dan.
Nice.
So yeah, those guitar parts were me pretending to be Steely Dan.
Man, you kicked ass. I really love it. Next track is Let It All Go Down.
Let It All Go Down. And that was another one that was just a direct, like, I was sad. I sat down and got a little drum loop going. And you know, those lyrics are about my friend who I was actually, the drum loop on those choruses is from a 12-inch of Janet Jackson Control, I think.
Okay.
I'm trying to think. I think it's Control. So I took that drum loop, and then I also nicked Human League Fascination.
Ooh.
So I took those two drum loops that I had made on the Gemini and came up with that. And then the bass line was a total, like any bass players out there, it's a ripoff of 3 Days by Jane's Addiction. It's the like the chorus bass line is, I just ripped that off.
Thought exactly. I'd heard that before.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So it's like, it was one of those pastiche songs that I knew pretty much everything I ripped off with the exception of the vocal melody, which, you know, that just kind of happened.
Love it. Love it. Fire Drill.
Fire Drill, another one that was like that. That one's kind of it's a different one. It's that's a little bit about addiction and friends that have been struggling with, you know, kind of. It's a lot of my friends were indulging a lot during pandemic, and myself included for a little while. Although I feel like because I came a dad, that kept me from going too far off the deep end. But you know, a lot of people I knew were, especially alcohol people my age, they were just.
Yeah.
You know, there was just a lot of like, F it, let's just go off. And that idea of a fire drill in your head kept coming back to me, like where you're like, you know, that moment where you're like, maybe I shouldn't do this, right, or maybe this isn't the way I should go. And then all that internal struggle you have, you know, around your decisions and your actions.
Man, I love
that. And then the drums at the end of that too, it was another, like, how can I make this sound like Phil Collins with the harmonizer?
Amazing. Amazing, Phil.
Thanks.
You got it, man. Comfort Vendetta. And I hear there's a video for this one coming.
Yeah, this is gonna be the single. And honestly, John, once I realized I was putting this record out, I was like, I gotta write at least one song I can play with my band right now. Because you know, the rest of these songs are quiet or need a piano. And Comfort Vendetta, straight up, friend of mine going through a divorce, wrote a song about this idea that the more you try to help somebody, the more they resent you. You know, they kind of hold it. They'll hold it against you. Yeah. And that phrase popped into my head, like Comfort Vendetta, like I'm holding you responsible for being caring about me too much.
Oh yeah.
And then the music was just straight up 90s, you know. Yeah. Pavement, Weezer, Guided by Voices, a little bit of Stacey's Mom on the keyboard part.
Got it going on.
Yeah, I mean, it's honestly shocking how many people have said they really like that song, because it, to me, it's such an outlier for the record. But you know, side two, track two seemed like a safe spot.
Man, you really deliver when you're bringing stuff straight from the heart, and I love it. I love
Thanks,
it,
John. I appreciate that.
Let's see, Lonely Satellite. I was checking that one out.
You know, if people love this song, it's probably my least favorite song on the record.
Really?
It just is. I don't know why. It's one of those songs that, like, when I write it's on the edge of a song no one will ever hear. Like, when I write a song that's that simple, like, it doesn't, to me, it doesn't. I mean, I get it, and I think a lot of people have said they like the groove, and they really like the lyrics and the story of this guy who's like an asshole, and you know, he's like, really what it is he's just lonely, you know. He's just, you know, and we're all lonely. We all live in these, like, you know, we all live in our own orbits a lot of the time. And again, that was one that I just came up with a guitar riff, and that's what popped out.
I dig it, man. Well,
Thanks.
I am about to run out of time, man, but
Yeah.
I'm gonna hit you for a Silly Me and
Yep.
Dim Sun.
Yeah, that's two. That was kind of a back to back. The Silly Me was the last one I wrote for the record, and it was also, it was like, how do I do something that feels like Prince if I did a Prince song? And then Dim Sun is just, you know, I'd read this article about one of the plans that they were throwing around was, how do we dim the sun to, like, cool down the earth? And I'm
Wow.
like, that seems a little counterintuitive to life to me.
Yeah, we need that sun, baby.
Yeah.
No, man. Listen, Greg, thanks for your time. I'm gonna add a graphic to this video with
Great.
your tour dates. And
Awesome.
you have got to bring this show down south and hit
I
Raleigh
know.
and Chapel Hill. And I'll tell you something else. Everyone and their mama from New York and New Jersey is moving to Raleigh, Durham, Chapel Hill, and they're waiting for you, Greg. They're waiting for you.
What's that great venue? Something cat
The
something?
Cat's Cradle
Is
in
that the place?
Carrboro. Yeah, man.
Okay.
Carrboro is a little town there at Chapel Hill, North Carolina, UNC Chapel Hill. It's a college town
Got
with
it.
lots of arts, very creative. And Ben Folds is out of there.
Awesome.
A lot of great music out of there, man. And
Okay.
you would fit in very well.
Yeah, we have to get down there. And also, you and I still need to talk about comedy at some point.
We got to do that, man. We'll have to do that on the next episode because
All right.
love
Thank you,
talking to you,
John.
man. You be safe out there, and I'll have
Same.
this posted soon, man. It's great talking to you.
Yeah, thanks for the time. I super appreciate your attention.
You got it, man. Keep on making that great music.